It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and I am also a parent. And like most people with kids, my husband and I had to make some tough decisions because of the pandemic. Probably the hardest one was, should we send our kids to school and risk exposing them to COVID? Or should we keep them at home, away from their friends, isolated, and going to school virtually? Pretty much every parent faced this dilemma. So did teachers, administrators, politicians. There were no easy answers. You might remember the debate.
We're more than 4 months into this pandemic, and there's still no bold national plan to safely return kids to the classroom.
Some worried reopened schools would spark super spreader events.
We are not throwing our kids' bodies, our teachers' bodies, in front of COVID.
I can't teach from a grave. If I go back to school, I will feel unsafe.
Others said early evidence showed kids were at low risk and keeping them home did more damage.
We need to open our schools and we need to get them back at the playground and in the classroom.
And at that time, those debates were understandable. We knew so little.
What do we know? What do we not know? Just the tremendous amount of uncertainty about how you were going to get COVID.
This is Emily Oster.
There was kind of no data collection effort on that. And I kept looking around for data on that and trying to figure out if there was data, just like finding myself in a sort of data desert.
Emily is a parent too. She's also an economist at Brown University, and she loves data. And over the last decade, she has become a best-selling author by using data to create a kind of new genre in parenting books. She dives into academic studies on pregnancy and early childhood and then translates them into regular language for parents, like me, so that we can make more informed decisions about what's right for our families.
I think that the sort of power of data is to help us understand. And my position, very broadly, is that if we explain why to people, it makes it much easier for them to make their own choices. And it may actually make them more likely to adhere to some recommendation that you're giving, or at least to prioritize better.
So during the chaos of the summer of 2020, Emily had lots of questions about whether to send her own kids to school. And then there were parents asking her for guidance. But there was no research for her to dive into to try and make sense of the situation. So she and her team decided to collect the data from schools themselves.
So when we started this, we said, okay, like let's target principals and superintendents, and let's try to pull in data. You know, let's try to ask them to do the tracking. Let's try to ask them these, you know, very basic questions, which were like, you know, here are 12 different mitigations you could be doing. Are you doing any of them? How many kids do you have in in-person school? And how many COVID cases did you have over the last, you know, 2 weeks? And we did this survey every 2 weeks to the district. So that's kind of where we started with that idea of kind of going to the school districts themselves as the sort of source of this data.
I mean, were you picking up the phone literally and being like, hey, so I work at Brown and like, how did this work?
Yeah, just on the phone, on the email, different places. It was a lot.
To which I have to say, like, no offense to you, Emily, but why you? You're a Brown economist. You know, you've got your own kids going at home. You're teaching. You're doing your own work. Where are the grown-ups here?
You know, where are the grown-ups? I know. Where are the grown-ups? I mean, I think one of the problems is that this wasn't anybody's job, right? So there's a sort of moment when somebody asked Betsy DeVos, who was at the time the education secretary, you know, like, why aren't you collecting information about what's going on with COVID in schools?
What's the role of the federal government in actually creating a much more expansive database?
And she was like, well, that's not my job.
Well, I'm not sure there's a role for the Department of Education to compile and conduct that research.
She's wrong. Of course, there were pieces of it that were her job, but there were also pieces of it that were the CDC's job. And it was kind of like, this was like two jobs. And unless those people are willing to work together, it was actually very hard, I think, for either state or federal governments to get it together. But I mean, I totally share your view. I think it was really bizarre.
We hear a lot about making systemic change these days, but taking on institutions like our schools or policing or healthcare can feel utterly daunting. How do we, as individuals, even begin to hold these pillars of our society accountable? So on the show today, three people who are bucking the system, outliers changing things up so that they can work better for all of us. Emily Oster and her team ended up collecting data from over 5,000 schools across the U.S., creating the most comprehensive database in the country. And even early on, the results were unexpected.
We did not see a lot of large outbreaks. In fact, the data that we collected, I think, was very helpful in painting a kind of big picture and in helping us understand questions like, are we seeing huge outbreaks in school? Are schools super spreaders? Are we seeing rates in schools that are way outside of what we see in the community, and sort of suggesting the answers to those questions were no.
Right, which was shocking to a lot of people. I mean, I remember when you came out and said, based on the data that we have, with the right precautions, schools can mostly reopen safely.
Yeah.
And that actually, despite the information that you presented, this conclusion was really controversial, right?
So, I mean, I think there were a few things. So one is, you know, this decision about whether or not to open schools became very political.
Yeah.
When the former president said that everybody should go to school all the time. You know, he sort of said it in a way that was like, if you're with me, you'll open all your schools and like, don't worry about COVID. And it generated a situation in which school openings really bifurcated on political lines rather than on science. And I think that there was a lot of, I would say, legitimate fear, particularly among teachers, and a feeling like, why should we have to go to this, you know, this potentially risky job when, you know, we don't have perfect data, you know, on this? And, you know, I think that was a piece of it.
I mean, as the months went by, I'll speak from personal experience. I was certainly looking to some of the information that you were sharing to make a decision about my own kids, and, you know, taking into account all the variables that you would present and all the data that was there, I started to relax a little bit about sending my kids back to school because the transmission rate was so low and because you sort of pieced it together into a story for me to understand to make a personal decision. But a lot of people got very angry with your, I guess they saw it as you inserting yourself into what should be a school or government system decision.
Yep. It has, you know, come with a not inconsiderable, like, you know, personal cost on some dimensions, which is, you know, it's like when you try to do something like this, like people yell at you, like makes you feel bad. And I think one of the things that made it possible to sort of keep doing this stuff is that I feel terrible when people yell at me, and then I very quickly forget. And then I do it again.
I mean, you felt terrible, but it worked, right? I mean, you showed that there was a hole in the system. And now with a new administration, the federal government is tracking what is happening with COVID in schools and looking back at how it may have affected schools. So in some ways, you held them accountable.
I think it holds it accountable. I mean, I think I hope that it sort of helps them. I mean, I have found it's an interesting thing to think about because I am really much more comfortable with the pieces of what I do that involve kind of talking to individuals or writing for individuals about personal decision making. But one of the things that has been so odd for me about this last year is this kind of like being deeply embedded in trying to work in this educational system. And, you know, I have a lot of feelings about, you know, the ways that things could be run, you know, could be run differently, or like things we could do that might make it better. You know, there are going to be some pretty significant losses for kids associated with having missed school last year. Figuring out where those losses were in terms of, you know, what demographics groups are most heavily affected, what places are most heavily affected, you know, those are important questions, which are going to be hard to answer if we don't know where schools were open and where they were not.
Part of me is like thinking like, this is huge because let's say 5 to 10 years from now, we have this group of children who are struggling in school and they happened to be predominantly children of color because they were the ones who disproportionately ended up going to virtual school, at least here in New York City. And then we see that we have less children of color in honors classes as a result, who therefore get into less colleges as a result, who therefore get less good jobs as a result, who therefore turn into adults who struggle. It's like this tiny piece of data can really, in the long run, tell us so much about how what happens when you're a kid in a crisis can change your trajectory as an adult.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a world in which in, you know, 50 years, we're going to be seeing, you know, what are the implications of this pandemic and of virtual schooling on mortality, mm-hmm. the same way they looked at that stuff in the 1918 flu. And I think that this stories like that sort of drove me to try to put this together, which is to say, like, it would be really bad if this information was lost.
In addition to the pandemic, we have also heard so many calls for systemic change in so many ways, whether it comes to race or jobs and wages. And I just think for a lot of people, it feels impossible, right? Like to make change that big, to change the way that systems work is daunting. But in some ways, your message is like, just start. Chip away at it.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a little bit of a message in some of the do is just like, well, it's daunting, but like you won't make any progress if you don't try. And I think that in some sense, all of the times when I have sort of felt like I wanted to quit this year, and also all of the times that I'm sort of most proud of are times when I was like, I thought I would do something because I didn't think it would be that hard. Mm. It's been like a huge trial by fire for me just in learning about what happens in this system and why some things are hard or impossible, but just be brave. Like, just try.
That's economist Emily Oster. You can see all the data she collected and how it's being used to analyze the impact of school closures over the last year at covidschool-dashboard.com. On the show today, Bucking the System. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. We'll be right back.